Hello again, it's Coach Kelly with another edition of the Seaman Wrestling Report. During the last episode, when I talked about the 2018-19 schedule, I alluded to the statistics that we track on an ongoing basis. We have been using our power rating chart for about a decade and can now track useful patterns to help guide individuals and monitor the program. I'm also interested in tracking first score data and plan to begin that in earnest this season. I listen to a few wrestling-related podcasts on a regular basis to inform, educate, and entertain. One of those is On the Mat, hosted by Kyle Klingman and Andy Hamilton. The pair are well-connected and do a great job with their interviews of current movers and shakers in the sport, and their discussions of relevant topics in wrestling are thought-provoking and informative. They are both also avid baseball fans, and several episodes ago began contemplating why wrestling can't take from baseball and do a better job of drawing interest by putting easy-to-understand statistics out there to stimulate water-cooler discussions and raise the profile of wrestling's top names. They have talked about a better dual scoring system along with an individual power rating system of sorts. The Point Differential Index, or PDI, was born from these discussions, and the two have gone through each NCAA Division I bracket and calculated the PDIs of each All-American and other top performers. As the weight class discussions progressed episode after episode, I became more and more convinced that the PDI is something that Seaman Wrestling should adapt. We talk about goal setting, drawing more interest to the sport, individual and team analysis, and data-driven decisions. The Point Differential Index covers all those areas and boils it down to one simple-to-understand number. To promote the inclusion of PDI on our stat sheet, I reached out to Kyle Klingman to see if I could get him to further explain his system and method. On the other end of the line today is Mr. PDI himself, Kyle Klingman, of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo, Iowa. Kyle, welcome to the program. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you. This is great, and I love that you have lived in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and you've made contributions in my hometown, so really honored to be on the program.
Shout out to Holmes Junior High.
That's right. Holmes Junior High. Man, that I went to Pete, so that was the enemy while I was there, and you can attest to this. It was a big deal, man. That was Penn State versus Iowa for our local flavor, and there were actually bets on who would win that junior high meet, so I love those days when it was a great rivalry.
You aren't a kid. We had off air, we had talked about Jim Miller just presented at our KWCA clinic last weekend. And of all things, he was wearing a Holmes Junior High shirt. So I had a little visit with him. And I told him that, you know, out of, you know, my 25 or so years of coaching, one of my biggest highlights continues to be beating Pete in a dual meet.
So, I mean, isn't it amazing where you just think about the level and where you were at that particular time, and those things mean a lot. And there's athletes that don't go on to college and maybe don't even go on to high school, and that's it. But those things do mean a lot, and they hold a lot of value. And when you can add a rivalry at that level, I think it really heightens what you can do with the sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first off, tell us a little bit about what you do at the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, and let us know a little bit about your background in the sport.
I'm the director of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. We're in Waterloo, Iowa. We are a nonprofit. Our mission is to preserve history, recognize excellence, and inspire generations. So we are actually in the midst of a remodel right now, and we're going to be bigger and better than ever. Triple the size of a wrestling room, Pat. So you can imagine what we get to do with that. Upgrades in technology. So we're just going to be state of the art. Very excited about what we get to do.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it sometime coming through. You kind of have an interesting background with the sport because you didn't actually participate, is that right, when you were coming through? But you sure have had and continue to have an impact on the sport.
Well, going back to the Pete Holmes, I actually did wrestle for 2 years at Pete Junior High. So that was my time in the sport, and I just found that I was better suited for cross country and track just because the body style. So you go toward what you're going to be successful in athletically. So I just had an opportunity for those 2 years with wrestling, found that I was better suited for wrestling and track. But so we go back to Holmes Junior High. Doug Van Gelder, who was the head wrestling coach at Holmes Junior High, he really implemented my love for the sport. I grew up around it. Family vacations for me were to Stillwater, Oklahoma, where the National Wrestling Hall of Fame is, which we're a part of right now, where Oklahoma State was. So my mom went to Oklahoma State. So I grew up an Oklahoma State wrestling fan, and I'd put bumper stickers on my car, and I'd get people flipping me off in Iowa. They'd see that, and they'd put notes on my car saying Oklahoma State's going to choke and Iowa's going to beat them. So I just had this whole scenario where Oklahoma State was what I got into. And Doug Van Gelder, who took me to my first national championship in 1995 at the University of Iowa, he exposed me to that. I hadn't seen the NCAA championships. I knew what they were, but they got me hooked. So from 95 on, I've been to every NCAA wrestling championship. So it's just grown from there, and my fanaticism has grown from there. Now it's not even being a fanatic. It's just being part of the culture, and it's just your lifestyle now. So it's really been fun to be a part of it, and that's just a short part of my journey into how I got into wrestling. But I would credit Doug Van Gelder a lot for that from Holmes Junior High, and then I'd also credit my parents for my mom being from Oklahoma State. She grew up around those wrestlers, went to college with some of those guys, and then my dad went to Northern Iowa. So I went to a lot of those wrestling meets at Northern Iowa at the West Gym. So I just had the right things happening. And then on top of that, Cedar Falls High School, where I attended, they were winning state championships. In 1993, my sophomore year, they won the state dual championship. They won the traditional state wrestling championship. So I got to be exposed to that. I got to see this great product on the mat, and I just fell in love with it because these guys were going after it. They had an entertaining style. Those guys were larger than life to me. And from that point on, I've just been part of the sport ever since.
Some time ago, you and your co-host, Andy Hamilton, began talking about a more relevant way of scoring dual meets and also a better way of promoting individuals in our sport by essentially putting empirical data on wins and losses and coming up with a bottom line number that can serve as a way to evaluate the overall body of individuals for a segment of a season, over the course of an entire season, or even across an entire career. Tell us the backstory of why you saw the need for the index and how you came up with the calculation.
Part of the reason goes back to just my love for statistics. I'm a statistical guru. I love looking up stats. I love going through old records. I love going to WrestlingStats.com and just looking up what someone did, who beat who, what the score was. I just get into that. I think a lot of people do. I think that's pretty normal. I'm a wrestling fan, but I also like football, baseball, basketball. And there's actually websites. There's a baseballreference.com. There's a footballreference.com. There's a basketball reference. We have wrestlingstats.com, but we don't really have a statistical, numerical data for the sport of wrestling. We have wins and losses. We have technical falls, major decisions, and decisions, which we can get into that I don't necessarily like. I think it's just putting a limitation on what those is. They're very arbitrary. Who came up with that? Why is a decision worth 3 points if you win by 1 to 7 points? Why is a major decision 8 to 14? Why is a technical fall 15? So there's not really a statistical way to evaluate the sport beyond wins and losses. And so Andy and I had a conversation, and Andy Hamilton of trackwrestling.com, he's a baseball guru. So one day he was explaining statistics to me in baseball. He was talking about ERA plus. He was talking about wins above replacement. He was talking about slugging percentage and how there's just numerical values that really you can capture how good someone is in baseball. And so we just got a conversation going. And with wrestling, it seemed pretty simple. Why not come up with a statistical value for what an individual wrestler can do just based on their score? So if you win by 10 points, you get 10 points in your what we're calling a point differential index. If you lose by 10, you lose 10 points. If you win by 5, you get 5. If you lose by 5, you lose 5. The challenge was finding a value for the fall. So the ultimate in wrestling is to get the pin. We want it to be that way. So in wrestling, there's a technical fall, which I don't necessarily like, but the technical fall, if you don't have that, there's no way you can put a numerical value for the fall. So a technical fall happens when you get 15 points. However, in college wrestling, you can get a 6-point near fall and you can get a point riding time. So if you're up 14-0, you get a 6-point move, which gets you to 20, and you get a riding time point. That means you win by 21. So we're saying that a fall is worth more than the maximum amount you can get for a technical fall. So we're valuing technical falls at 21, maximum points there. So a fall is worth 22.
Okay,
and so we just started doing data and trying to figure out what we can do with a numerical value. So we across the board, you can see what these guys are doing with our point differential index.
So in addition to the fall, so an injured default or disqualifications, they also count 22 points?
They do. Those count as 22 points if the match takes place. We only want to evaluate data of matches that take place. So if you go out on the mat and someone forfeits to you, that does not count because this has to be about competition. It's not about receiving a forfeit and nothing happens. So, for example, this year, Jason Nolf, he had an injury default. He defaulted in a match, but the match actually had taken place. And so he lost 22 points on his point differential index, and that hurt him a little bit, but his body of work was so strong that he made up for that with just having dominating wins throughout the season. So it's not fatal, as we found out, that a 1-point loss isn't necessarily going to be fatal, just like a 1-point win isn't going to bump you up one way or the other. That's a 2-point spread. But when you look at a fall being 22, if you gain 22 versus lose 22, that's a 44-point differential there. So that's where you make your money. That's where you can get big points. So it really puts an incentive on the fall, which I still think is the ultimate in wrestling. I still think it's more important than a technical fall. I think it's more dominating than a technical fall because you have to be deliberate in what you do to get a fall. It just doesn't happen. Now, some people say, oh, he got caught. I don't believe that. I think that you're pretty intentional when you're looking for falls and these take them down, let them up, the catch and release game, that works, and you can get technical falls that way, but going for the fall is still the ultimate in wrestling.
Absolutely. So it's not surprising to hear the big numbers that like a Zane Rutherford or Bo Nickel come up with when doing the calculations. What is intriguing to me, though, however, is to hear of some of those individuals that finish maybe as a low-placing All-American or maybe didn't even reach a podium but still put up respectable PDI numbers. What does their PDI reflect in these cases?
Well, that's a great question because the PDI really does paint a picture of what that season looked like. So as we went through the data, what I think is interesting, so if you put someone with a 20-10 record and then you put their PDI up there, you can see what kind of wrestler they are. And so as we went through data on these guys, you just start seeing fall, 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 and then maybe he has a few losses in there. Maybe there were 6-7 points. But you can overcome a lot of that by being a dominant wrestler. So as you mentioned, there's times where the first, second, and third place finish at the NCAA championship, so we just looked at this at 197, actually had a lower PDI than the 6th, 7th, and 8th place finisher. So what that says is they are going for big points, they probably take some risks, and they aren't holding back. And so I think if you have a record, so if we take the 20-10 record and you have a 9 or a 10 PDI, that means you're probably kicking some butt somewhere in there. You have some losses, but you're going after it and you're being deliberate in trying to score points. Whereas some of those guys in the top end, they may have a really sparkling record. Maybe they're 27-3 with a 5 PDI. Probably a wrestler that's holding back, not necessarily holding back, but maybe a little bit more deliberate in just being selective in how they score. Maybe they're just a takedown and then they will write it out. Maybe they're picking up those 3-2 wins, which I'm not a big fan of. I think that really hurts the sport of wrestling unless there's some action and some scrambles in the match. So it really does just give an indicator of what that person's body of work looks like. And I think it's an accurate depiction of what kind of wrestler they are. And you can decipher that with a numerical value, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Just, you know, hearing your explanation there just further emphasizes why I feel strongly about implementing it in my program and why I think others should as well. You know, really what you're saying there with this number is it can help draw some excitement to the sport and kind of individually incentivize, you know, going after it and putting more points on the board.
I think so, and I think it goes back to when I think about my love for sports and when I collected baseball cards and basketball cards. What was I looking at? I was looking at Larry Bird's average of points. I was looking at his percentage on the free throw line. I was looking at how many yards did Barry Sanders have. I was just a stat guru. And so there's a narrative when Barry Sanders played, you were awe-inspired, but I also liked the stats. I wanted to see his stat line and see what he did. I think wrestling doesn't really have that. You have a win-loss record, which is pretty colorless. It just shows a little bit of a picture. It shows what you did on the season, and I think you do have to have that because I think it's important. But let's dig deep. Let's see what kind of wrestler they are through some sort of numerical value and attach that to their wrestling career. And I think it could be good for kids coming up. And let's start making wrestling cards and putting that out there so people can get excited about it, because I really do think statistical narratives really help build a sport, and I think that's what we're trying to do with this point differential index.
So you and Andy have wondered if there's some way of adding in strength of schedule to the index. It's my opinion that the best feature of the index is the simplicity of it, and I think the strength of schedule is something for the fans to cuss and discuss. I think you got it right, and I hope programs from across the country pick it up as a legitimate promotion and evaluation stat at both the college and high school level.
I think we got it right, too. The more I've dug into it, I think that trying to add in a strength of schedule probably diminishes a little bit, because how are you going to determine what strength of schedule means? Because a lot of that can be after the fact. And so let's just say, for example, Travel Dolagnev, who is Division II. There's an Olympic-caliber wrestler wrestling Division II. And so in PDI, if you try to attach some sort of a strength of schedule and say, hey, Travel Dolagnev was a Division II wrestler, we're going to minimize who he is just because he happens to wrestle in Division II. So I think the more I've gotten into it and the more I've thought about it and just tried to think about the complexities of coming up with a strength of schedule and who they wrestle, I agree. I like the PDI as it stands, because just like with anything, if you take baseball, you take ERA, you look at some of the statistical narratives that baseball, basketball have, you can't really pick apart strength of schedule. You can't say a hitter was going against a better pitcher throughout the season, so that's why his average is different. I agree. Let's just keep it simple. You get to see what this person did. I think that in the end, it comes out in the wash. You're still going to see who an All-American was. You're still going to get your opportunity to be on the podium. But we're just providing an extra way to add incentive to go for big points. Even if you lose by 10 or you're down by 10, you can make your PDI closer by getting a last takedown and closing the gap by 8 so that you can make your score even higher. So the more I think about it, and Andy may disagree on this, he still likes the idea of probably putting in some sort of an overarching way of putting in strength of schedule, but I do like the simplicity of it, and I think we should just keep it the way it is.
All right, so speaking of high school, I've adapted the index for my purposes by making the fall injury default and disqualification worth 20 rather than 22 due to no riding time and no 4-point near fall. Do you like that adaption for high school? And is there anything else that might need to be tweaked for use at the high school level?
I think it's the only adaptation you can have, so I think it's the perfect adaptation. I think what you have to do is, because there is a numerical value for a technical fall, and just to go back on history, there was a time during Gable's era, during Wade Chalice's era, where there was not a technical fall, so you could win 35-0 and not get a technical fall. So that's more within recent times. I think they brought that into the 1980s. I think in the mid-80s they brought a technical fall on board. So the only way we can do this is because there's a value for the technical fall. For high school, it is different. There is only a 5-point near fall. There isn't riding time, so 20 points has to be the numerical value for a fall. So it's going to be a little bit different in high school. I think the numbers will be a little bit lower, but not much. Probably even a little bit higher, because as you know, Pat, in high school you're going to see more falls because the guys
absolutely
aren't quite as good, and you know that. You go out there and maybe there's a state champion who's going against a guy that's a first-year wrestler, of course he's going to get a pin. So that's going to be more prevalent. So you're going to see some jacked-up scores at the high school level, especially with some of these dominating wrestlers. There might be an 18 or 19 in there with these guys that almost pin their way through a high school season. So imagine what a Spencer Lee, imagine his high school PDI and what he did and his domination. So just it'd be fun to actually go back and look at some of that historical data and see what PDIs for some of those great high school wrestlers are.
So you and Andy have been talking about the point differential index for a few months now, and you recently penned an article in Win Magazine on PDI. Is it your hope that the point differential index will become a standard in wrestling statistics?
I hope so. I think it's really good. They have something right now at the NCAA level, which is okay. It's a domination index, so you just go with the archaic way of you get 6 points for a fall, you get 5 points for a tech fall, you get 4 points for a major decision, and 3 points for a decision. And then the opposite is true if you lose by those amounts, and then you just tabulate that and you get a numerical value. And in that article, I think I pointed out that Zane Rutherford had a 5.19, but if you look at 5.19 and you look at that in a numerical value of what that means for a technical fall, I think we indicated that his PDI for the season was 17 or somewhere around there. So it's a better indication of what he actually did during the season because those are the points he scored. And so I think if you can attach that and have a real realistic picture rather than just a 3, 4, 5, 6, I think it just offers a better statistic. So I'd love to see it catch on. I think that with you putting that on there, you sent me an email with having a PDI on your stat sheet. Boy, that was great. I showed that to Andy, and we were saying, man, that's so cool that you're getting on board with that. And I think it's good for the kids. I think it's going to be a way to have competition. You want to go way back to Randy Lewis and Ed Bannock. For those who don't know, they were both Olympic gold medalists. They were NCAA wrestling champions for the University of Iowa in the 1980s. Randy Lewis was 70s and 80s. But they had competition. They wanted to see who could get the fastest fall. They wanted to have competitions, who could get the most pins for the season. They wanted those records, and they were going after them. And I think it's a good way to have quality wrestlers say, I want my PDI to be higher than yours. And I think that's healthy for the sport.
All right, so before we go, speaking of Win Magazine, I know from your podcast that you are quite the trivia guy. I have been a subscriber to Win as an individual or at school since the first issue came out on November 15th, 1994. Can you name the two individuals that graced that first cover?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I'm gonna go out there. I'm going to say Bruce Baumgartner.
Yes, that's one of them.
Tom Erickson?
Yes, Tom Erickson, Bruce Baumgartner. Bruce Baumgartner is lifting him, returning him to the mat. Absolutely. Wow, that's impressive.
Man, I don't know how I pulled that one out, but I was about to say Gable because I remember one where he had a jersey on there, and that might have been a later issue. But, yeah, that's a good piece of trivia. I like that.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to join the Seaman Wrestling Report. Thank you for all the work you do to promote and advance the sport of wrestling.
Hey, I'll be disappointed if you don't come back up to Iowa and visit us at the Gable Museum. And if you do, make sure you get on our podcast so we can start talking more wrestling.
Oh, I'd love that. I would love that. That's all for this edition of the Seaman Wrestling Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.